Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope.
A man who taught many wonderful truths about life once said, "Make the most of your present opportunities. Make the most of your present opportunities." Let me repeat once again. Make the most of your present opportunities. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am this is a wonderful piece of advice. Appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Make the most of your present opportunities. So many of us waste our present time worrying about the past or the future. And actually, we can do nothing about either the past or the future. Little sympathy or patience should be wasted on the person who is eternally crying for the good old days or bemoaning that things aren't as they used to be. Naturally, they aren't. Time changes all things, as it is changing you right now. And were it not for change, there could be no progress in this world of ours. Probably a good bit of advice to all of us would be to live every moment as it comes to us, just as though it were the only one we had on earth. To appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Let your life be filled now with love, with happiness, with harmony, with courage, with faith. Too many of us are wasting energy trying to relive the past. And we are putting off our good from day to day, from month to month, and from year to year, so that we never quite catch up with it. Why not live now? Forget the troubles of the past and stop dreading the future. The expression of our powers and abilities is governed by our thoughts. If our thoughts are dwelling in the past or in the future, our power and abilities will be lessened in the present because they will be trying to follow our thoughts to realms that do not exist. We need all our abilities right now in the present moment. We cannot afford to dissipate them by letting our mind dwell on the past or by worrying about the future. If we live rightly every present moment, we shall have no occasion to mourn over the past. What does it really matter today what happened yesterday or some other day in the past? It is beyond our recall, so it is not worth the effort of worrying about it. Dr. Frank Crane expressed a bit of good philosophy on this matter in his short article called The Past. Says Dr. Crane, a good deal of morbid nonsense has been said and written and thought about the past. The past is irrevocable. We have been told in sermon and story, you cannot escape the past. The past can never be changed. And so on and so on. The whole trend of this thought being that the past is a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, dogging our steps forever, a sinister nemesis, waiting its chance to strike us down, the account book of an angry God, sure to confront us someday. All of this is morbid. Most of it is dramatic. The underlying sentiment of it is false and weakening and septic. As a matter of fact, our past, as Maeterlinck puts it so well, depends on our present and changes with it. Our past depends on our present and changes with it. What the past is depends upon the way you are now using it. Its effect upon your destiny will be gauged by how you translate it into the future. If we brood over the past and weaken ourselves with vain regret, with self-contempt and remorse, then that past will poison and undo us in the present. But no matter what the past contains of our sin or folly, we can, by a right use of it now, make it minister to our welfare. First of all, we can learn wisdom from the past. By it, we can realize our faults to be corrected and our offenses to be atoned for. And with this wisdom, we can go on to better things. The only true repentance is so to use the past as to enable us to build a better future. Weeping and wailing and brooding, those are the luxuries of morbidity. The past is beneath our feet. We can go down into it and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon that past to higher things. The great enemy of life is despair. The great friend is hope. Despair paralyzes, ruins. Hope energizes, for we are saved by hope. Face the future. Whatever the past has been, let it nerve you to spend your remaining days in faithfulness and loyalty to your better self. These are the words of Dr. Frank Crane, and I feel he certainly has the right view. Be concerned about your past only to the extent that it can teach you. The mistakes and sorrows of yesterday belong to yesterday. Yesterday provided sufficient time in which to consider its woes. Most of the worries, the griefs, the heartaches that we suffer are nothing more or less than memory of the troubles and hurts that we experienced some time in the past. If we could only remember that sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Moffat renders this passage as the day's own trouble is quite enough for the day. And when you stop to think of it, isn't this true? We can readily understand from this that the miseries or woes of yesterday can enter today or tomorrow only through our memory. Before the end of yesterday, we should have put out of mind every disturbing thought caused by yesterday's situations. Those were yesterday's problems, so let them, along with yesterday, pass from sight and from memory. Let not the sun go down from your wrath is a mighty good bit of advice, or so it seems to me. We should not let the day close with our mind disturbed. It is too late to do anything about the way we let yesterday close. But we can do something about the way we let today close. Let us set today free in order that we may meet tomorrow, another new day, fresh and clean and unused, in the right spirit. Our wrath, mental disturbance, and physical miseries of yesterday have no place in our today. They only serve to crowd out the joys and blessings that are in store for us today. Each new day, a new world will begin for us if we do not carry into it the woes of yesterday. If we have not forgotten the woes of yesterday, we do not really experience a new day. To us, the day is just an extension of yesterday. When we let yesterday's sun go down, finding us wrathful and disturbed in mind, we are not obeying the biblical injunction to forget our miseries. We are not approaching the new day with a clear mind and a clean heart. The wisely given command to forget is a provision for our happiness. Were we to remember all our mistakes of the past, we should not have time to think of the good we want. Thou shalt forget thy misery. What shall we forget? What does the misery include? What comes under the category of wrath of mind? Everything not founded upon God or good and truth. It was meant that we should enjoy today to the exclusion of the wraths and miseries of yesterday. We are not to let one little rankling thought of yesterday sully the purity beauty of today. You know, friends, the sleep that God gives us at night is but a form of his power to help us forget. Sleep is a vestibule through which we pass from one day to the next. We are to shed all our useless thoughts before we approach the next day. What of the wrongs that someone had committed against us yesterday or some other day? What of our jealousies and suspicions? What of the things we secretly accuse ourselves of? All these must go. We must forget them. They belong to the dream or nightmare of the past, in which we have awakened to a new day. Are you willing to obey the command, "Thou shalt forget thy miseries"? You alone can decide. You alone can reap the benefits of forgetting. You alone can decide whether you will spoil this new day, fresh and clean and unused, by harboring the adverse thoughts of yesterday. You alone can decide whether you will today remain in the wrathful state of mind of yesterday, or whether you will make the most of your present opportunities. The things of yesterday brought to your mind, which caused you to be disturbed, are quite insignificant today. Forget them. Learn to wipe from mind every thought that works against your highest good. Enjoy today to the fullest. You can do this only by approaching it with a clear mind, receptive to the good in store for you. Let each new day begin life anew for you, rather than being merely an extension of yesterday. Start out this morning by obeying the command to forget. Make up your mind you are not going to try to carry yesterday along into this brand new day. Erase from your mind any sense of blame, any memory of failure, all thoughts of wrongs of the past. Was it not Ruskin who said, "Let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourself. Let me repeat, let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourselves. It behooves all of us to live in the present in the way that will make of our future that which we wish our present were now. Yes, friends, it's up to us. We can go down into and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon the past to higher things. It is up to us. And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Easton. This is UBC, the United Broadcasting Company.
Okay. Today, we're doing our tiny house, tiny town feature. So we're on tiny town number 3, and we're going to do a redo of what we one of the towns we mentioned yesterday, but do it as a highlight. And that is with Venice Beach, Maryland. 24 hours ago, I did not know. Venice Beach, Maryland existed. Man, I was right near it too. I mean, with a matter of feet. Anyway, Venice Beach, Maryland. We're featuring at Sandy House 3. Venice Beach, Maryland. They have 50 families. Now we don't know what number of people 50 families equal. I mean, is it 50 families? Well, at bare minimum, let's say a family is 2 people. Well, some people might even say 3. So it's got bare minimum 100 people, to maybe 180 people or what have you. Let's see. Anyway, bare minimum 100. So 50 families, because 50 times 2 is 100. And 50 times 3 is 150. So it's got anywhere from in and out 100 to 150 people that are residing in Venice Beach, Maryland. All right. It only sits on 13 acres of land. And let's see. I've placed some pictures of it on our Facebook page. It's DIY Housing TV. I've been in this beach, Maryland. So, hey, if you got 13 acres of land, you can do what they did with Venice Beach, Maryland. Start your own town. Population 50 families, whatever that number might be. All right. We strip it down to bare bones, 50 people, but only on 13 acres of land. All right. And on, maybe not today, we'll talk about the Preemption Act of 1841. I consider Venice Beach, Maryland, I bought this up yesterday, the Civil Rights Table. In the Civil Rights Table, you want to get on the right side of the table. You don't want to sit on the left side. I mean, you might have to do it for a teeny bit. But get on that right side of the table. On the right side of the table, you have more control. All right. So, okay. That's all I want to put out here for today, but we're only 20 minutes in. So we'll play something here. That's a filler.
What's up, guys? This is Alex Martin, and this is the Content Creator Podcast, where I stimulate your mind and show you how to market your grind. And today, we're going to stimulate your mind.
How are you maximizing the gift that God put on the inside of you?
I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
If he gave you the vision, he'll provide the provision.
I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of 8. And that day, I took that 5 and turned it into 60. I took that 60, put the 5 back that I started with, and turned that into 600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit too. So when they say, ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
Now before we hop into today's show, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Now let's jump into the video.
So Mignon, I didn't know this about your story. And I've known you for years now. And if I am correct, you were a teen mom. When did you have your first?
I had my first baby in 1993. And I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
But I graduated from high school a year early. So I had gone to college early. Nobody prepared me for what the party was going to be like on an HBCU campus.
Oh, man.
So second semester, I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee.
Are you serious? What HBCU did you go to?
I went to Xavier University.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the shocking thing to me, and this is why I love your story, because every time we do something like this, right, something powerful comes from it, and I learn something brand new from you. And you had 5 kids before 25?
Yeah, I had 5 kids at 21.
21?
Yeah, by the time I was 21, I had 5 children. 3 of them were a wedding present.
Okay.
And then 2 of them I had given birth to, and I had my 6th one at 27.
27?
Yeah.
And didn't drop out of college?
No, it just took me a little bit longer. I even took my children to school with me.
What?
Sometimes they were in class. My baby Dylan, who now runs the business, would sit in the back of my Bible class. He would never be silent. He would never sit still. But when I needed him to go to class, it's like something happened to him, and he would just color until the class was over. Man. Like, God, shut that baby's mouth so I could graduate.
Man. And today, we won't tell the people how old you are. You still look about 30 years old. You know what I'm saying? But today you're running a multi-million-dollar cupcake business. And I don't think it's a cupcake business. I think that you're running a multi-million-dollar ministry. Because when people experience you and your cupcakes and your team, your staff, it's just a different experience, right? And I want to talk about that because some people are experiencing you for the first time here on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And when people experience you, what do they get? I know what I get. Yeah. I get a deeper side of you. But when people experience you for the first time, what will they get? I'm curious.
I'm hoping that they get joy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's my mission in life. I want to leave everyone experiencing Mignon Francois with joy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is such a big value for joy in heaven because in the Bible it says those who sow in tears will reap in joy. And when you think about sowing and planting, it takes time for a harvest to grow. And I just think that when that harvest is joy coming out of the things you've gone through, it just lets you know that everything that's happening to you is happening for you.
Yeah.
It's something that you can plant, and something is going to grow out of it. And I believe that's what my whole experience has been about.
Yeah. And so you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
You wrote a book. And this book, I was emotional when I read it. This is not the book. I want it to be fresh. I actually read a PDF version
mm-hmm.
that your team sent over. And it's called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. And
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now.
Yeah.
And my philosophy is very simple.
Yeah.
I was who I was, but I am who I am, and I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect know-how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars that tune good and firm feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas. Wailing and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Lou Berry's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me. In your high society you cry all day. Been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four car garage, and we're still to the basics of love. Let's go to Luke and Bach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain, out in Luke and Bach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Luke and Bach, Texas, Willie and Waylon and Paul. This successful life we're living's got us feuding like the Hatfields and the Coys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Jerry Jeff's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain, out in Luke and Bach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
All right, all right, all right. The we have started a series which will last the balance of this year. Every live stream podcast that we do, which we do 20, bare minimum 20 a month, on, you know, usually. So we're on day three, which is, and we call it our Tiny Towns series. Now, you've heard of tiny houses. Well, the best place to put a tiny house is in a tiny city. I mean, tiny town. So this is our Tiny Towns series, which we'll be doing 20 a month. We're on number three, and we covered this a little yesterday, so we're going to spotlight it today because when we archive all these podcasts, so a person can easily look it up when they in the archives, you know, Tiny House 1, Tiny House 2, number 3. All right, so this will be Tiny House number 3. We started out a couple of days ago with Luke and Bach, Texas. Luke and Bach, Texas, just a real quick review. Luke and Bach, Texas has a population of 3. The town sustains itself because their business model is essentially they do, included in their business model would be they do weekend events, mostly music or entertainment based. All right, but also in Luckenbach, Texas, if you want to book out the whole town for a wedding, for a party, for a picnic, for whatever outdoor event you need. In Luckenbach, Texas, it's 10 acres big in size of a New York City or Dallas or Houston or St. Louis. Some people might call it big as a neighborhood, maybe, or a subdivision at least, all right? But it's 10 acres big, so that's why I consider it a tiny town. And my definition of a tiny town has got to be typically 100 acres or less, no more than 100 acres, typically less, and no more than 100 people. So Luckenbach comes in, it fits into there because it's just 10 acres big and it has 3 residents. So that was tiny. That was number one. Yesterday we did another town, which was based, they built at Selby, North Dakota. A husband and wife team was at the beach one day up in North Dakota, or a recreational area, let's put it that way, near a lake, up in North Dakota. They have beaches up there too, but near a lake in North Dakota. And they noticed that, there's a lot of people that come here, but unless they bring their food with them, there's no place here that will cook them food. So they built a hamburger stand. And they built the town of Selby, North Dakota, around a hamburger stand. And Selby is, you know, that's only a few acres also. Bigger than, hold on, let me look it up in my notes. Selby, North Carolina. I mean, not North Carolina. I don't know. I get those two confused. Okay, let's see. Selby. And I'm building up a collection of these towns. And you know what? They're more Luckenbach, Texases than New York cities. However, if you live in New York City or a large city like that, you're typically not aware. You would probably get... Sibley, North Dakota, 30 acres with 9 residents. All right. So, Luckenbach is now today, 24 hours ago, I did not know about this town. And I was a matter of feet or a few short yards away from it. I've been to Highland Beach, Maryland, at least, you know, 2 or 3 times. But right next to it, and next time I'm up in that neck of woods, I got to go visit it, is Venice Beach, Maryland. Venice Beach, Maryland. And so I covered it a little bit yesterday, but today I'll go into more detail. Now, Venice Beach, Maryland can also be come under the banner of a historic black township. So let's get to it. Venice Beach was founded in 1922. All right. So Venice Beach is 101 years old. 101 years old. It was established during the Jim Crow era. And a lot of people, when you bring up Jim Crow, they think of all these negative images and we get all these victim stories and all this other stuff. But in this case, and it wasn't the only case, they started their own township. And it was Highland Beach, Maryland, which was started by, which I read about them, you know, a couple of days ago. But that was the inspiration for Venice Beach. So Venice Beach sits on 13 acres of land. All right, that's something that everybody within the sound of my voice that you can acquire. Matter of fact, taking a page out of Luckenbach, Texas, what we shall be doing within the next 21 to 30 days on weekends, typically on Saturdays, to start with, we'll be sponsoring tours starting right here in Florida at our first 4 acres because I've had people that now they want their acres here in Florida. So I say, all right, the easiest thing for me to do is, all right, well, this takes Saturdays and it'll be you'll get about a 4-hour tour, trust me. Okay. So we'll start at our location, but then we'll take you to other sites that have 10 to 20 acres, and then, you know, because we want to educate you on this stuff. It This is raw land. It's off the grid, but I figured to be on it. And for me to get a peace of mind, okay, so I can sleep at night, educate the people first. So we'll be doing Saturday tours, and I'll let you know that date. That's coming up real within a matter of two, 3 weeks. Well, let's say 3 to 4 weeks. And we'll be doing tours starting here in Florida on Saturdays. So it's like there'll be – just mark your – if you're in this neck of the woods, it's, you know, some of the things – we'll cover part of the tours, I guess, on Zoom. But for people, boots on the ground, and that's what we're starting this for. I figured that because once you decide to buy it, the process, we have to finance and all that lined up, but we want to get you educated at first, and that's going to require – that's something you can't do online. Now, we can do Zoom, you know, and we can have people peeking that way, but for the people who actually want to own something and want us to – I figure, all right, let's educate them first, and we'll have it'll be a tour – and we're starting off with that. All right. So let's keep on, you know, for that. Anyway, let's see. Venice Beach, it's 101 years old this year. And Venice Beach, Maryland, that is, Venice Beach out in California. And already sits on 13 acres of land. They have their own website, which is Venice Beach Citizens Association. And read off of that. You can go to it yourself. But let me read off it. Venice Beach is a water-oriented private community. Bam, that's their statement of purpose. All right. It's a water-oriented, in air quotes here, private community located within Annapolis on the western shore of Chesapeake Bay. It is inhabited by approximately 50 families, roughly half of which are year-round and the other half are seasonal residents. Several families are third and fourth generation residences. So, I mean, this goes back, we got families going back 101 years on this. Venice Beach is chartered as a special community benefit district under the laws of Maryland, and its affairs are governed by the Venice Beach Citizens Association. The Venice Beach Citizens Association is governed by elected officers, which are basically blood relatives, okay, and a board of directors. All right, now I'm reading that off of their website. Events. Holland Beach, all right, Holland Beach, which is the inspirational town, which is older than Venice Beach, and they're both historic black townships. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, meetings have been suspended until off further notice. There's an annual membership fee of $75 for that. And let's see. They have a bulletin. They have bulletins on here. They have governance. They have history. Venice Beach was carved out of the vast Duval plantation of the early 1800s that stretched from the Chesapeake Bay to the South River of over 300 acres. All right. In 1850, William and Charity Brashears purchased 48 acres of land from a Duval descendant named Enoch. The Brashears property was bordered by the Chesapeake Bay on the east and the Black Walnut Creek and Oyster Creek on the north and south, respectively. The Brashear family farmed corn and tobacco on their plot of land until the early 1890s. The descendants of William and Charity Brashears eventually sold 28 and two-thirds acres of farm to Charles and Laura Douglas. And Charles Douglas was the son of Frederick Douglas in 1893, and that became Highland Beach, Maryland, which we've talked about on here before. And once again, for people who don't know the backstory on Charles and Laura Douglas, Charles and Laura Douglas, a black couple, were turned away from a hotel because of their race back in the 1890s. And Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, the NAACP, they had not been born and or not been invented yet at that time. So what did Charles and Laura Douglas do? They didn't march or they didn't protest or anything like that. And this is when I brought up the concept of the civil rights table. There's the left-hand side of the table where you can march and you can protest and you can look for Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. But if none of those are available, then you can get on the right side of the civil rights table, which is what they did in the 1890s. And they said, you know what, I'm going to use my civil right to buy 40 acres of land. And that's what they did, and they started Highland Beach, Maryland. Now, from that point, that was an inspiration to another couple, and we're going to get to them, William and Charity, which we'll get to that. And they purchased 13 and one-third acres from, Osborne B. Taylor in 1922. That became Venice Beach, which exists today. It's 101 years old. Collectively known over time as the beach, they would become the premier summer destination for African Americans in the Mid-Atlantic regions for many decades. The first lot on Venice Beach was purchased by Mr. Perry Howard in 1922. And the first house constructed was the Ridgely Family Cottage the same year. The Venice Beach Citizens Association was established as the governing body for the community in 1927, and its first president was Dr. John T. Leak, L-E-A-K, a prominent Washington, D.C. dentist. Over time, the shallow wells, outhouses, and sandy roads of the early years have disappeared, and instead, Venice Beach has welcomed the modern residential community in step with the ebb and flow of the 21st century. And I'm glad they brought up the outhouse because, see, when these people started, matter of fact, a lion's share of the towns of the United States that are big towns today, they did not have electricity. They did not have, Mount Vernon, where George Washington had his estate, Thomas Jefferson, Boston, Massachusetts, Providence, Rhode Island. When these towns started, and these towns are, they're not 250 years old yet, but they're over, some of these towns are over 200 years old. Because the United States is not even 250 years old yet. The United States is a baby. They have towns around this globe that are 3,000 years old. 3,000 years old. So, and most of those are in Europe and or Asia and Africa. But, so most of the historic towns that exist in the United States, you know, Chicago, when DuSable, they claim as he was, he founded, you know, what we now call Chicago, Illinois. He didn't have any electricity. The modern conveniences of electricity, municipal electricity, private company electricity, co-op electricity, or municipal water did not exist when a lot of Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Chicago, Boston, Massachusetts, Providence, Rhode Island, Washington, D.C., those services that we take for granted today didn't exist then. The early inhabitants of the White House, let me put it plain and simple to you where the ghost can get it. The early presidents of the United States, when they finally built the White House, they and their family and their guests had to go shit in an outhouse. I think that they had to shit. And if you had to take a dump in an outhouse, okay, I remember the first time I had to take a dump in an outhouse, I was in Greenville, Mississippi. I was something like fourth, fifth grade, something like that. It was a Christmas vacation. We did a road trip from Washington, D.C. So my stepfather came from Greenville, Mississippi. And I don't know how many acres they had on the farm, but that was the first time I actually saw a real scarecrow. And, you know, they had electricity. And I imagine they had a well. But to take a dump, there was an outhouse. That was it. Okay. So I remember when I went into the outhouse, the smell wasn't, it was bad enough, but you just had to grin and bear it. But I remember there was a couple of big spider webs up in there. And, you know, I kept my eyes on those spider webs when I was picking. So we were there for the Christmas holidays or whatever. But it wasn't too bad. But anyway, so and my stepfather and his brother grew up. That's what they grew up with, man. You know. So if we go back to some of the most powerful men in history in this country, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, okay, Abraham Lincoln, those guys had to get up when they had to take a dump, when they had to take a shit at the White House. Dolly Madison, they had chamber pots. Now they did have chamber pots, okay, which is a fancy piece of porcelain that you take a dump in. There was no flushing, so there was the outhouse or the chamber pot. Take your choice, but we don't have to deal with that. So a lot of these towns started like that. All right, so I'm putting in all this out there to say this. If you plan on buying some land in a rural area, okay, particularly if it's zoned agricultural or even residential, all right, you know, putting in the plumbing, put it this way, think like George Washington. If off-grid plumbing, which means a chamber pot, and they have better technology, off-grid technology for hygiene these days, and taking dumps, okay, but and it's portable and it's clean and it's sanitary. If once again, more than half of the presidents of the United States, including Biden, the ones who set the tone for the United States, this country, they basically, for when it came to lights, water, they were off the grid. In today's terms, they were off the grid. The White House, for a number of years, was off the grid. They had no electric where you can flick the switch like we can do today. They didn't have no solar panels. They didn't have no windmills. They were off the grid. And I'm saying all this to say this. On your project, because this is what we're doing, everything will be off the grid. Now, we'll have some solar panels and all that. George Washington didn't have that convenience. Thomas Jefferson, Dolly Madison, Abe Lincoln, there was no solar panels for them back then, but we got them now. But, like I say, you'll save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars you can legally set up off the grid and operate fine. And that, and they do have some off the grid technologies today for water and for electric. I mean, because they have plug and play solar systems now and solar generators now that you can take out. You can take your flat. There are people, it's called boondocking. Look it up. There's no shortage of videos on YouTube. Look up boondocking. There are people that are having Super Bowl parties in the middle of a desert with no municipal services. That's what's happening in 2023. But I'm just saying, you know, because there's a lot of things, you know, go to air, live as close as you can to the early presidents of the United States. They were off the grid in the White House. All right. You can still have, you can have electricity. Now, see, they didn't have electricity. They had to do candles and kerosene lamps. Today, you can have a solar generator, and you can have a flat screen TV. There are modern conveniences that you can have today off the grid that they didn't have. But the common denominator is you don't have to deal with a lot of places code enforcement. George Washington, Dolly Madison, Abe Lincoln, there wasn't code enforcement as we know it today. You know, so there are a lot of common denominators with these tiny towns, that you can do things in these tiny towns today that you can't do in a bigger city like Cleveland, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, Orlando, Florida, Dubuque, Iowa, Butte, Montana, places like that. In those bigger places where you have a lot more people, you know, you got more rules and regulations and codes and all this other stuff. The towns we're naming, and I think every town we named so far is 100 years old, maybe older, or knocking at the door of it. So anyway, getting back to Venice Beach. So that's, I mean, hey, that is simple as that. In 2020, you can find yourself, this, they're on 13 acres. They're 100, so for 100, because for some people might say, but there are no jobs there. Well, there must have been something sustaining this town because it's 101 years old. It's 101 years old. So a lot of the towns in the United States started off as agricultural communities. And then some became ghost towns because, you know, people moved away and there wasn't any more farmers to farm. But now, I mean, you know, like with Selby, North Dakota, they started off with just a hamburger stand. And they don't have a McDonald's franchise or Wendy's franchise or nothing like that. They were cooking mom-and-pop homemade hamburgers. They built a town based on mom-and-pop homemade hamburgers in North Dakota. Now, Venice, you know, and we're going to call people from Venice and see if we can, Venice, Maryland, so we can get straight from the horse's mouth somebody who's a part of the bloodline of generational wealth when it comes to townships. Okay. Just imagine the thinking of a community of people like that. Where they're working on fourth generation. Like I said, it's Venice is 101 years old. Venice Beach, Maryland. So, but their plan is $75 a year for the the Civic Association that they've set up there. We know that much. But, we want to hear from them. What else have they done over that 101 years to sustain the town of Venice Beach, Maryland? Okay. All right. Tomorrow we'll get on another town. Let's see. Matter of fact, before we go to that, let's see, it's 2023. All right, Highland Beach, Maryland is 130 years old. Oh, hold it. Let me double check. Okay, Highland Beach. Highland Beach, Maryland, a population of 118. Okay. Let's see. All right, Highland Beach, Maryland was founded in 1893. Like I say, these are projects. Organize yourself. Let's see. All right, yeah. Highland Beach is 130 years old, and Venice Beach, Maryland, 101 years old. Okay. So, once again, these are towns that some kind of we'll get somebody in from Highland Beach, and they can break all that down for you. But now you have more options, because now you can, I'm pretty sure you can work in Highland Beach, every town that we've named, like Luckenbach, Texas, a 10-acre town, people, but they have internet connection. They have a phone number. Highland Beach has it, so you can work remotely now in these towns. So, like I say, that our niche. Or tiny towns, because with tiny towns you can do anything you want. Basically anything you want. All right, so, okay. Let me find my way back. And I'm discovering new towns every day, new tiny towns every day. That's why we'll be highlighting 20 a month. Next month will be we're just on day three with this, and they're all over the planet. So I would recommend people like a tiny town for everybody, but if you want to move to a place that cost of living in many cases is dramatically less than it would be in a larger town, then you might consider a battery of smaller towns that are larger than them. See, there's some distinctions here. There's tiny, and I might even, let's say tiny towns, smaller towns are bigger than tiny towns. Something like a town that's got 500 people, because my cutoff is 100 people, but a tiny town that had no more than 100 people. It was got 101 people I classified as a small town. All right, and then, you know, so then you can get up into the thousands and millions of people. But the tiny towns and many of the small towns is where you can you can actually prosper, in my opinion. All right. For instance, if you're struggling, I'll give you an example. The DMV, which stands for, that's the Washington, D.C. metro area, stands for District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia, those suburbs that are connected to Washington, D.C. You could be struggling in Washington, D.C., financially paying that rent or mortgage payments or even that room that you're renting in D.C. or the surrounding suburban areas like Silver Spring, Maryland, Wheaton, Maryland, Arlington, Virginia, Fairfax, Virginia, Prince George's County, Hyattsville, Maryland, place like that. Or you can travel out to Hagerstown, Maryland, and find you a fixer-upper house, if you're fortunate, for $55,000. And we're talking about something that you can fix up, a fixer-up that you can whip into shape within a week. A week into a week, depending on how many people you had hire or help you. But now, that same house in Silver Spring, Maryland, or in Washington, D.C., or Fairfax, Virginia, might cost you $300,000, and you still need to fix it up. Now, if you go out to Western Maryland, drive an hour, to West Virginia or Western Maryland, or let's say an hour to like maybe a 90-mile radius of Washington, D.C., a 90-mile radius to maybe a 120-mile radius of Washington, D.C., all right, then you can find $25,000 houses that don't need any work. We're talking about single-family detached houses in suburban areas, but we're looking at a 90 minute to 120 minute at best radius of that town, because you have people that Washington, D.C., and the late Marion Barry brought this up. And then this is at the time he said it, because he's been gone for a few years now. Over 700,000 people that do not live in Washington, D.C., work in Washington, D.C., Monday through Friday. That's a lot of people, 700,000 people. Their commuter flights that come to Washington, D.C., every Monday through Friday, people that live in Boston, but they fly into D.C., they go to work, they do the 8 hours, and they fly back home to Boston. Boston, New York, Philly, I doubt Baltimore, because Baltimore's so close. But you have a bunch of people that do that Monday through Friday. That's been a sustainable business for Reagan. They call it Reagan National. It was originally National Airport when I was coming up. It sustains those airlines. Then there's Amtrak with trains that, from once again, from Richmond, Virginia, 90 miles to the south, to all the way to Boston, 5 days a week. Now, they have a MARC train. The MARC train is a commuter train. That just runs Monday through Friday. So you got people 90 miles south in Richmond. They hop on that train, MARC train, come to D.C., do the 8 hours, go back home to Richmond at night. That MARC train goes to Baltimore, Delaware. I don't know how far north it goes, but it goes. So you got Boston's, if you drove it by car, Boston's a 9 to 10 hour drive from D.C. I know because I've driven it. But they have commuter trains and planes from as far north as Boston. Now, some people, what they'll do is they'll come into D.C. for the week and then go home on weekends. But trust me, there's a commuter community from as far as north as Boston. West Virginia's nothing. Okay. And like I say, Mount Royal, Virginia, they come to D.C., come out of Allegheny Mountains, they do their 8 hours, they go back home Monday through Friday. All right, nothing new. And a lot of businesses have been sustained that way. Okay, I'm getting, gotta go, because I'm getting calls from Asia, so let me take care of that. Let's see, we'll go to the phone line tomorrow, but I got calls. And there'll be an Asian version of this show within a year. Okay. But for right now, I need to go take care of that. So, okay, anyway. So tomorrow, we'll cover, like I say, Venice Beach, Maryland. Read up on it. It's only 13 acres big. All right. And that's the biggest town we've featured so far. This was the inspiration came from Reba Brown's family, the Booth Settlement, which is in Mississippi, and it's a 300. They're over 100 years old, and I think it started with his name was Zach Booth, with 300 acres. So they still have it in the family, and. We'll be taking a look at the business models of these communities, and we give as much history as you can. But like I say, the one thing I want to bring up today is once again, particularly if you're on the budget, all right, George Washington. Or the White House in the early years. I'll look it up to find out the date in which the White House had indoor plumbing for the first time. But the majority of the presidents of the United States, world leaders, men who shaped history, along with their families, you know, people like Dolly Madison and all these other people, they did it. The White House in the early part, state history of the White House, had no electricity. Had no municipal services, yet they were able to function. So you could do the same thing today. If you want to have a family compound, if you want to start your own family town, I'm just grabbing Chrisville, Pianchiburg, Rebaville, okay. If you want to start your own town, you can say, you know, if you're on a budget, then you might have to go use off-the-grid lighting technologies. Let's call it that, off-the-grid lighting technologies. Back in the day, back in George Washington, Thomas Jefferson's day, the off-grid lighting technologies were because they didn't have electricity. Solar panels weren't invented yet. They had, it was candles and kerosene lamps. That was it. All right. Indoor plumbing, as we know it today, did not exist. The White House had a shit house, also known as an outhouse. They also had chamber pots. All right. So today, you can get on Amazon And you can order a sanitation, a portable sanitation unit that is neat, clean, and very hygienic. That's what you can use today. All right. And then we'll have people on, because as we're setting up, you know, a lot of these towns started by pitching tents. That's how they got started. They pitched a tent. And we'll talk about tent communities. So anyway, we've up to three. Tomorrow we'll have another town that we'll pick from with the backstory and all that. We'll take calls tomorrow. Right now I've got calls I got to return from Asia, so let me get to them because it's a 12 or 13-hour time difference. Have a great day.